हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषा जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Bottom of 17. Vrajanath, you said earlier that the conditioned jivas within the material world display five levels of consciousness, and that bhaktas either on the stage of sadhana bhakti or bhava bhakti are counted amongst those who are under the subjugation of maya. At what stage of devotional development is a bhakta considered maya mukta, liberated from maya? Raghunath Das Babaji, as soon as the jiva is initiated into Shuddha Bhakti, he receives the designation Maya Mukta Jiva, a liberated soul. However, he is only truly emancipated from the subjugation of Maya when he has fully matured in Sadhana Bhakti. Prior to this maturity, the jiva is only liberated to the extent he has attained awareness of his constitutional spiritual nature and liberation from false ego. Right? So how much he is, that's how much he's freed himself from this false ego and understands his nature as servant of Krishna. To that degree, he's liberated, right? So that it may move, right? Sometimes in the kirtan, then it moves very much one way, and then when it's not, then it moves the other way, like that. But the point is how much he is how much is established, right? But then when he comes to the, when he's free from maya, when sadhana bhakti is fully matured, because it fully matures a sakti, right? So then you move into bhava. Then you can say, then he is, that he's truly then freed. But otherwise, if one's not functioning under the control of maya, one is liberated.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? It's that simple. So if you're absorbed in hearing and chanting associated devotee, you're liberated. Yes.
But materialists also have glimpses of liberation, like just from that
attaining
glimpses of liberation, just from attaining something material that.
No, it's not so much that. It's means materialist. You mean what kind of materialist? You mean
just karmis.
It means no, because they're not interested in liberation. They're not trying to be freed from the material entanglement. They want to be freed from the anxiety of material entanglement, but they're not wanting to get free from entanglement.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? You know, the man is, having a problem, with the house and all that, then he gets on a ship and sails around the world for a few years like this. But it's not that he wants to be freed from the concept of being materially engaged. It's just that particular engagement was getting a bit scary. You know what I'm saying? So you would say that these jnanis and yogis might get a glimpse.
Okay.
But the thing is it's only because of the work that they're doing. It's not necessarily specifically means they're working for that, so they get a glimpse. But for the devotee, he is liberated when he's understanding I'm servant of Krishna and acting on that platform. If he doesn't act on that platform, then he's not. But he's designated as that because that's what he can do. You know what I'm saying? But then you can say he's truly emancipated when he comes to that platform of bhava, because then there is no conditioning. All right? So that's why you have these overlapping definitions. Anartha Nivriti then is at the stage after Bhajan Kriya and Nishta. But at the same time, as then Rupa Goswami talks about anartha nivriti as meaning bhava. Mm. When you come to that stage of attaining liberation, that's anartha nivriti, because then the anarthas of the linga sharir, the stula sharir are gone. Right?
But they can still come back.
Huh?
But they can even still come back.
Generally it wouldn't, for it means one technically can, but generally it wouldn't once one gets there. And then there's also the point of, if one has come to that platform by going from here to there, then one's in one's spiritual form, so there isn't anything. Now it's just a matter of being focused in his consciousness, right? How much he's attracted to Krishna or attached to Krishna. That's what would be the position. Does that make sense? So here also this element of liberated. So someone who's chanting Hare Krishna is liberated, but the point is when they understand that and practice that, they are. And when they don't, then it's not as liberated.
Yeah.
A little less liberated. So liberated and less liberated. Is that okay?
So fully matured was asakti. Fully matured sadhana bhakti.
Yeah, fully matured is a sadhana bhakti, but that means then it brings one to bhava.
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, so you'd say that yeah, brings that to there. So whether that means that this side or that side, but the point is one is constantly absorbed.
Mm.
Right? So we could say that steadiness of being more absorbed than that side would start from ruchi.
Yeah,
you know, so you can say ruchi and asakti are mature, or you can even say that, you know, whatever it is. So the point is that it's like the beginning stages of the glimmer of bhava is there from ruchi, because then that taste is there, then that attachment. So then that naturally matures into bhava.
That's because it moves from the intelligence to the mind. The mind gets attractive.
Means you can say that, but it's not that the intelligence is a problem either.
No.
Spiritual intelligence is not a problem. Spiritual ego are not a problem. So it's not so much that it's moving from the one to the other.
Mm.
But you could say is that once you come to the platform of Brahma Bhuta, then knowledge is not the powering force, because you already know what's to be known. The point is that it's the relationship with Krishna that furthers it.
Mm.
Right? So that's why it's... Because knowledge is to burn up the material concept. The material concept is burned up. What's the need of... It's not that the knowledge has no use. It doesn't have a... means it doesn't mean anything. It just doesn't have a function.
It's done what it's supposed to do.
Yeah. You know, it's just like, you know, you use the pot as long as you're cooking the sabji. When the sabji's cooked, you don't need the pot. Does that make sense? So it's like that. Is that the material conception is the fuel for that knowledge. Because you have material conception, you're applying the knowledge on that. So that knowledge is like fire. So it burns up that wood of material consciousness. But when the wood is burnt up, the fire also goes out. So that's why in bhava, it's not based on knowledge. Though they have more of an understanding of technical things than what goes on here. But that's not the drive. Here it's like we're thinking about it, absorbed in it, so that knowledge is a great impetus. But there it's not. It's that it's how nice Krishna is, that's the impetus. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's always this overlapping of what's primary and what's secondary.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. We're in the next page. Yeah. Complete liberation takes place when the jiva is completely freed from its gross and subtle material bodies and established in the swarup and transcendental service. So, therefore, in bhava, right? Because then he is freed from his gross and subtle material bodies and established in the swarup. So that's either by he's physically there, or it means that he's there by meditation. Right? Means Raghunath Das Goswami, he offers his respects to the residents of Vrindavan, those who are physically there and those who are there by meditation.
Like Prabhupada?
Like Prabhupada meaning?
Was in meditation in Vrindavan all the time.
No, but he's also physically there. Oh, we're talking about meaning those who are physically there, meaning they don't have a gross and subtle body here anymore. They only have there. The soul is residing there. The other is that within this body, by through meditation, then you're functioning in Vrindavan, in your Sarup.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. In any case, you're on the Brahma Bhuta platform. So that's why it can be done. Once conditioned, then that option is not there. It's not actually an option for, you know, just anybody. So it's not part of the sadhana practice, right? It means if you're a sahajya, yes. But if you're not a sahajya, it's not part of the practice because it's not real, right? Unless you're free from this, how are you going to operate that? You can't have them both at once. You know? Sincere adherence to the process of sadhana bhakti ignites at some stage the spark of bhava bhakti. If the flame of bhava bhakti is kept burning and the jiva has thus become firmly fixed in his elevated state of spiritual consciousness, then at that time of leaving the gross body, his subtle body will also dissolve and he will obtain his pure transcendental sarup and transcendental service, right? Because it's the subtle body that covers the jiva. As soon as the jiva comes here, Maya covers him with the subtle body. Right? That's how she keeps him controlled. Because the subtle body is made out of what?
False ego. Intelligence mind.
Okay, what mode is the false ego controlled by? Ignorance. What did intelligence manifest from?
Passion.
And then the mind. Goodness. So he's controlled by the three modes. That's how she controls him. Right? Because you don't have to control the body by that. Because the gross body is controlled by the subtle body, right? It means the false ego will be the identity of the gross body. The intelligence will be the senses, right? And then the mind is there. Does that make sense? So that's what's going on. So it's already taken care of. You know, not that the modes of nature don't manage the body, But that's just managing the body. The modes of nature are making the hands move and the eyelids blink and all these different things. Mm. But that's not specifically affecting the consciousness.
Mm.
You know, what's affecting the consciousness is the subtle body, right? And its attachment to the gross body and the gross surroundings, right? So you can say the surroundings are still the gross body because you can only perceive the surroundings as much as your gross body can. Right, how much your senses can perceive, that's what you can hear. Like dogs can hear things we don't hear, but we can see things they can't.
Mm.
You know, so like that. It's your body then judges what the field. So that's why we can say the body is the field of action.
Mm.
Right, because we may say, oh, there's the body and then there's the field. No, the body is the field. Because it is the access to everything around you. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Right, so depending on your previous samskaras, that's how you view the world, right? So that's because the body is a culmination of that previous samskara, right? And by that samskara, that's what the mind has been interested in, right? From what you've done, now you've gotten the results. So therefore, the state of the mind and the state of the body in the senses, that's what information you pull in.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So here it's saying that when one leaves the gross body and therefore attains to the level of bhava, so you attain your spiritual sarup, that means in the process of leaving the gross body, the subtle body also dissolves. So therefore you're, you know, what did he say here? Truly emancipated, because then there is no subtle body, there is no control of the modes anymore. Then one is simply within one's spiritual sarup. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. The material condition, but that doesn't mean that the one in meditation, because then he's in that body, he's not controlled by this.
Mm.
Right? Does that make sense? But through meditation. So one is you're directly there, the other you're there through meditation. But as devotional service, you perform it or you meditate on performing it, you get the same benefit. So it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like that. Yes.
Maharaj, how often does it happen that one attains prema in this material body, in the material world?
You want like a number or something.
Well, it looks like it's very rare.
Yeah, it's very rare. As long as you're happy with that answer, we're good. But if you want a percentage, then we got a problem here.
I just wanted to know, like, what is our chance? Like,
what is our chance? What's the importance? Why is that? Why are you taking that as a goal? It means developing prema is the goal.
Yeah.
So you don't have to develop it in this life to go back to Godhead. You simply have to think of Krishna when you leave the body. Then you go back to Godhead. Right? And when you get there, then they'll train. The point is you're getting trained in Gokul, whether you do it directly there or whether you do it in meditation. It doesn't matter. The point is either way you get the prema. You know what I'm saying? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Kind of. What's kind of not okay? Means I'm not sure if I want to ask this.
No, I just wanted to know because, like, this age is the Gaura Yuga, and then it says that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu opened the storehouse of love of Godhead.
Yeah, it's opened the storehouse of love of Godhead, so that means then it can be obtained. The point is,
this either in this life or in the Gokul in the next
life. It doesn't matter as long as you get it.
Yeah.
That's why it says by hook or by crook. It doesn't matter. Right. Somehow or another, you just get it. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
And one can employ one's subtle body, even though it might not be under the control of the modes. It might be control of, you know, Daivi Shakti, under higher energy, correct?
Yeah, means the Sarup Shakti is the same person. So the point is it's still managed by the modes because that's how it mechanically works.
Okay.
You know, it's just like you drive your car for Krishna or don't drive your car for Krishna. It still functions by petrol and by pushing the pedals and moving the little steering wheel.
Right.
You know, so that stays the same. The mechanics are the same. The point is it doesn't matter if the body is controlled by the modes as long as the jiva in the body is not controlled by the modes.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
So that means that a birth in Gokul, one still has a subtle body and one still, but...
No. There is no Linga Sharir from here. There, it's spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence in that. But there's a non-difference. It's not like the soul is one thing, the subtle body is one thing, and the gross body is another thing. It's one thing. It's you.
I see. Then how about like the story of those gopis who didn't have the adhikar to go to the rasa dance?
That's because they didn't have the purva rag. It means in the yoga process, they weren't on the platform of samadhi.
Uh-huh.
They were less than samadhi. So their meditation on Krishna was there, but it wasn't complete, that there was nothing else of importance than Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they couldn't go, because someone who's going to get distracted, why they should be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that rasa dance is only for those who, mm-hmm. there is nothing else other than Krishna that's important to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So that's why they got stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So those who, in getting stopped, immediately that anxiety burnt up everything there, then immediately then they went. But those who, you know, they needed a little bit more meditation to do that, then they didn't go that night, they went at the next rasa dance. But in other words, that night you either were qualified, immediately became qualified, or became qualified to go to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
So it works out. It works out.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Yeah. What we're meaning here is that even though the advanced person, he's not controlled by the modes, but the body's still managed by the modes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just how this world works. That's the mechanics of the world. But you're not under the control of the modes.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The material conditioning of the jiva remains, therefore, throughout the period of sadhana bhakti, even spilling over into the beginning stage of bhava bhakti, though only residual amounts persist. Right. So, in other words, the conditioning is there. You don't have a gross or subtle body from the material world, but the fragrance. Does he mention it here? It's like the example is given if you have a box of hing. And you throw out the hing and you wash the box. It's clean. There's no hing there, but what does it smell like?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's the whole point, is that even though one's there, there's still that fragrance. So that's why then they have to get purified. That's what it's gotten rid of. Mm-hmm. So it's the sums that whole that because the sums they're in the consciousness mm-hmm. that has to be completely cleared. But there is no subtle body. There is no karana sharir, right? So and there's no gross body. So therefore it's only the
vague remembrance.
Yeah, that vague kind of thing where one tends to focus a little bit more on the surroundings rather than what the purpose of the surroundings are for.
Okay. I was reading one of your comments previously that the
more
residents
loudly.
Of Vaikuntha,
right.
They still have some mood of enjoyment that they have the same body and the same planet and
yeah.
the same qualities as Krishna.
Right.
So that means that the qualification to attain to the rasa dance is much greater than what we expect from one of those residents of Vaikuntha.
Yes, because the residents of Vaikuntha never go past prema. Prema is there, because prema is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that there's another eight stages past that one can obtain, depending upon the rasa.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So the idea is that, therefore, they have to be able to go beyond that, you know, that particular... It's called purvirag, that total attachment.
Right.
You know, I mean, you need that purvirag to get to prema. So you can say as they have that, but it's not. It's pure devotion. But that's why Braj is called pure unalloyed devotion.
Mm-hmm.
Means that it doesn't have, because those are spiritual desires. They're not material. But the point is it's still, you know, you're pleasing Krishna and you're being happy. But it's all on the spiritual platform. But the concept in Braj is that you're not dealing even with your own interest in happiness. It's only Krishna's. That's what makes it so complete. So we see is by that kind of prema that the Lord is there. He's living with the Lord, with the devotees, and they're interacting. It's very wonderful. But then we see is that in Braj, then that complete surrender of Krishna is greater. Because their surrender is greater. He reciprocates. How you surrender is how he reciprocates.
Mm-hmm.
So that pure unalloyed, then that gets Braja Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not like that, then you get, you know, the Dwarka Krishna, Vaikuntha Krishna, like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something? Yes. Yes.
Mahārāj Śukadeva Goswami says, unmotivated, uninterrupted. Devotional service can satisfy this up. Those in Vaikuntha, they're unmotivated.
Yeah, I mean, you basically say it would be unmotivated because you can take materially they're unmotivated, right? And it's steady, so that's why they come to the platform prema. The point is up to that point it's the same, but the thing is there is that element of that pure unalloyed that you're not even looking for some spiritual benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The only residual amount persists. Therefore, the authorities on our line have included sadhana bhakti and bhava bhakti within the five levels of consciousness considered maya kaivalita, under the influence of maya. The gross materialist seeking bhakti and the jnani seeking mukti most certainly also belong to these five levels. So then here we are taking the it goes into the anandamoy, so it can be counted there. So you can count it that it's below, but it's also then it's beyond. Just like the jnani comes within these five. But then there is the element of anandamoy that's beyond that. Right. So it seems that you have these, because you always have that kind of double element. You know, like sadhu sangha before you've developed shraddha, and sadhu sangha after.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a more mature stage. It's the same principle.
Mm-hmm.
The details aren't any different, but your consciousness is different.
Mm-hmm.
So, amongst those souls who are liberated, complete emancipation from subservience to maya is only eventually accomplished by those jivas blessed with Shuddha Bhakti to Sri Hari. The imprisonment of the jiva began when the jiva forgot his position as the eternal servant of Sri Krishna. This forgetfulness is the original offense of the jiva and is the root of all the jiva's subsequent offenses. Right? So now here you're talking about one jiva. So that means before we were talking, who is the Vaisheshikas? That whether it's one person who got us into this mess, or whether it was was a group effort.
Yeah.
Like that's
cosmic.
Yeah. But here it appears that it's one person who gets you into trouble, and that one person is you. Like that. So each jiva is committing the cardinal sin.
Yeah,
right? Right. So all this thing is that, you know, you're paying for that, you know, whoever committed the cardinal sin, you're the one who committed the cardinal sin. So, like that. You know, each one. This forgetfulness is the original offense of the jiva and is the root of all the jiva's subsequent offenses. So that means any of these other offenses that are there, they're all coming from this original offense. So the original offense is I'm the controller and enjoyer. So everything else is based on that. Right? Only the mercy of Sri Krishna can forgive all these offenses and nothing else. Therefore, the mercy of Sri Krishna is alone the indispensable instrument that can fully release the jiva from the captivity of Maya. Okay. So again, we see that this element, that there's an overlap. So this shows, just as there's some of that fragrance of Maya even on the liberated platform, you know, a living entity coming from here, that means that it's that fragrance can be there when you're there originally. Otherwise, how do you commit the sin? Mm-hmm. Right? So that's the meaning of the tatasta, that they're both there at once. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's there's this and there's that, and then, you know, so you can't fall from that. Because there is no sin. How can you become envious in a place where there's no envy? But the point is tatasta means there can be envy where in the place where there's no envy. Right? Otherwise, how do you have the door of no door? Right? So that's the problem. You took the door. And it's not a door because it doesn't lead to anything of any use. So.
All right.
Yes.
This last sentence, it is very similar to what the Christians say about Jesus.
Meaning?
Only the mercy of Krishna can
do that. Oh, the indispensable instrument that can fully release the jiva from the... Yeah, I mean, it's just... So that aspect they have right, is that only by the mercy of the Lord and the devotees can you become free. But the point is there's a difference between... Because there's a difference and non-difference, so they can't really tell where the difference is and where the non-difference is. That's where it gets a problem. You know, it's like, means the Lord and the devotee are non-different, at the same time they're different. So they can't tell. So the devotee represents God, but the devotee is never God. So that's where the problem comes in. Is they'll say, no, the devotee is God, and so there's no difference. So then if there's no difference, why does he have to be the son of God? If it means he's the son of himself? I mean, well, how does this work? You know? So he's his own son and he's a holy ghost at the same time, but he's actually there, but he's a ghost, but he's the father, but he's also the son. So he's, you know, I mean, it doesn't make sense. The principles, the ideas of all those are fine, but the total concept of how it works, that's what is missed. Because it's for anyone will say that the mercy of God is basically, any monotheistic will say it's the mercy of God, how one will become liberated from here. But generally their liberation from here means liberation from, you know, this bhumandala, and you attain to swarga, right? That's your liberation. You know, that's so, yes.
They also claim that Jesus died for our sins, which somehow releases us from the responsibility.
Yes, and it means how long does this go on for? Yeah. You know, it means, you know, you do one thing forever, but it means that, we appreciate the power of his sacrifice, but at the same time as, you know, where's ours? Where's the reciprocation? If someone sacrifices for you, the natural things you sacrifice for them, you know? So the point is that Yeah, how does it work that he died for our sins, but we're still committing them? You know, it's
well, he's dead already. I mean,
he can't die again. Yeah, that's true. So, what kind of
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool.
That's great.
Now the question is, the real question is, if they hadn't killed him, would he have rebuilt the temple?
I think so.
That would have been the, that's the real question.
Yeah. I
think so. You know, so. And then the problem is if someone else comes along, are they going to let him rebuild the temple, or are they going to kill him first? You know, so yeah, so it's going to be a problem. I don't know, does this mean anything to anybody? Okay, you understand it. No one else understands it. Oh, well, don't worry about it.
Even Jesus said, my disciples will carry their own cross.
They'll carry their own cross.
Yeah, so they have to sacrifice too.
Yes. Means they will, means at some point they'll figure it out, or you know, what does that mean? Or they should be carrying, or...
It's their responsibility.
It's their responsibility.
Yeah.
Okay, so you caught that side. You didn't catch the other side, which I was talking about.
I was just...
It means about the Messiah.
About dying for our sins means that we have to reciprocate and sacrifice also.
Yes, of course.
That much.
That, yeah, but otherwise it's kind of bantered around pretty easily. Okay. Vrajanath, how many types of Maya Mukta Jivas are there? Raghunath Das Babaji, initially, there are two types of Maya Mukta Jivas. The Nitya Mukta Jivas, eternally liberated souls, and the Bada Mukta Jivas, those who have attained liberation from the previous conditioned material existence. The Nitya Mukta Jivas were never captured by Maya. They are categorized into two groups. Nitya Mukta Jivas, who are Aishwarya Gata, engrossed in the opulence of the Lord in a reverential mood, and those who are saturated in Madhurya Gata, the nectarian moods of the divine conjugal love of Sri Sri Radha Krishna. The Aishwarya Gata Nitya Jiva Muktas, Nitya Mukta Jivas, are the Nitya Parshads of Sri Narayan, the presiding Lord of Vaikuntha. They are the particles of the spiritual effulgence emanating from Sri Mula Shankarshan, who resides in Vaikuntha. The Madhurya Gata Nitya Mukta Jivas. Right? I said it right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was impressed.
Yeah, well, I didn't even believe it. I did. Are the Nitya Parshads of Sri Krishna, the Lord of Braja Vrindavan. They are the particles of the spiritual effulgence emanating from the body of Sri Balaram, who is situated in Goloka Vrindavan. The Bada Mukta Jivas, after the attainment of Mukti, are of three kinds. Aishwarya Gata, those steeped in the opulences of the Lord. Madhurya Gata, those absorbed by the sweetness of the Lord. And Brahma Jyotir Gata, those who meditate upon the impersonal Brahma Jyoti effulgence of the Lord. Mm-hmm. Right? Do we catch this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Means, in other words, there's basically those who were never, it means those who are eternally liberated, they never came under the influence of Maya, and those who did come under the influence of Maya, right? So now it's saying, of those who didn't come under the influence of Maya, then they're in two categories, those from Vaikuntha and those from Vrindavan, right? And of the liberated souls that were bound, right? Then there are three kinds instead of two. Those who are in Vaikuntha, those who go to Vrindavan, and those who go into the Brahma Jyoti. Mm. Right? But we understand you can't stay long in the Brahma Jyoti, so at some point they'll come back. So unless they keep making that choice forever, you know, at some point then they'll switch into one of those other two. But at least they're situated there. So therefore you count it as three. Yes?
Mara, so these Padamukta Jivas, they emanate from...
Yes. That's what he said before. He didn't mention it now. like that. It just means that they're under that particular that potency.
So that's basically us.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. It's good call.
That's Sankarshan, isn't it?
Well, that means he's Mahasankarshan means the original Sankarshan. Uh-huh. Means you have that Mahanarayan, Mahasankarshan. So Mahasankarshan is then the source of all the Vaikuntha. Right? Because from there expands then Dwarka and the Vaikuntha planets. But then from him it expands Karanodakshaya Vishnu, mm-hmm. right? The Purusha avatar. So from there then the jivas who are captured by Maya, they're expanding from there. Mm-hmm. Okay. But it's all the same person. It's Balaram, Mahashankarshan, and yeah. Mahavishnu. There's still Balaram.
Yeah.
Like that. The jivas who in their period of sadhana were inclined to the reverential moods of bhakti and Aishwarya were elevated to the planets of Sri Narayan and Vaikuntha as the associates of his Nitya Parshadas. Those jivas who in their period of sadhana were attracted to the intimate moods of bhakti and madhurya became the eternal residents of Sri Krishna's Goloka Vrindavan and now relish nectarian rasa as the associates of Sri Krishna and his nitya parshads. However, those jivas who sought to merge into the non-dual absolute Brahman and as a result have attained sayuja mukti after death are in the debilitated situation of Brahma sayuja, amalgamation into the impersonal Brahma jyoti. Vrajanath, what is the final destination of those who worship Sri Gauranga? Raghunath Das Babaji. Sri Krishna and Sri Gauranga are non-different in terms of tattva. They are in the same absolute truth and both are the fountainheads of Madhurya Rasa, nectarian honey-like mellows. However, there are two ways in which Madhurya Rasa manifests. Madhurya, transcendental conjugal sweetness, and Audarya, transcendental magnanimity. When Madhurya is preeminent, Sri Krishna is manifest, and when Audarya is prominent, Sri Gauranga is manifest. In the original Vrindavan, Goloka, there are two symmetrical halves, Krishna Pita, the abode of Sri Krishna, and Gaura Pita, the abode of Sri Gauranga. In Krishna Pita, reside those jivas whose devotional mood is primarily Madhurya. Appended with Audarya, they are the devotees of Sri Krishna. In Gaurapita, the residents in Gaurapit reside those jivas whose devotional mood is most pronouncedly Audarya, supported by Madhurya. They are the eternal servitors of Sri Gauranga. In certain cases, some eternally liberated souls are present simultaneous in both the pitas through their Sarup Vyuha, personal expansions. In other instances, particular parshads participate in one peat in their spiritual forms, being absent in the other. Right? So you could be in one, other, or both. Mm-hmm. Like that. Devotees... Devotees who worship Sri Gauranga exclusively in their period of sadhana attain Gaurapita. When they are liberated and perfect, whereas those who worship Sri Krishna exclusively in their period of sadhana serve in Krishna Pita after liberation. Then there are those devotees who in their mood of sadhana worship both Sri Krishna and Sri Gauranga. After obtaining liberation, they acquire two transcendental forms and serve Sri Krishna in Krishna Pita and Sri Gauranga in Gaura Pita simultaneously. This is the divine and confidential mystery of the inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference of Sri Krishna and Sri Gauranga. Yes?
In Gaurapita, are they preaching to Mayavadis and spreading Sankirtan movement?
No, they're just chanting Hare Krishna, basically. They're just having Sankirtan pastimes, that's all. I mean, because in Goloka, there is no... Just like in Gokul, I mean in Vrindavan, there's no demons, so there's no Mayavadis over there. But the thing is, there's a non-difference between there and Gokul. So then here they
maybe there's rumors of Mayavadis.
Yeah, rumors of Mayavadis, maybe. Yeah. Could be rumors of Mayavadis.
Then he said, Udarya, transcendental magnanimity, is connected with mercy.
Mercy, because you see in this sweetness, both of those are aspects. right? It means that the, it means you have the Madhurya is mentioned here. Means there are two ways in which Madhurya Rasa manifests. Madhurya, transcendental conjugal sweet. Madhurya uses Madhura Rasa. So Madhurya, transcendental conjugal sweetness, and Audarya, transcendental magnanimity. So the two are part of the sweetness. That's the element of compassion is an element of sweetness, right? And the conjugal rasa is also that element of sweetness. They both go together. Just which one's the most prominent? So when the sweetness aspect is the most prominent, then it's in Vrindavan. When the magnanimity, then that means Gaurlila is more prominent. You know what I'm saying? In the conjugal rasa, you have both. So it's just a matter of which one's more prominent, that's all.
So this kind of knowledge particularly reserved for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, because others, they don't worship?
No, they won't know. They'll know something, but they won't know this much.
So no details?
No. Means they understand is that the point is they may worship Krishna and that element of the Madhurya Rasa, but it's still Krishna as it's still the Aishwarya element is there. It's still a Vaikuntha. So you do have lower Goloka in which Radha and Krishna are engaged in pastimes, but it's in opulence. You know, like Radharani goes to the Rasa dance in a swan airplane with 10 million maid servants, and you know, stuff like that. So it's there because you do have, like, means they're like Shris and Madhvas who worship Krishna, you know, in that form in Vrindavan. But it's still, it's that the Lord of Vaikuntha, it's one of his opulences is the sweetness. So it takes on a slightly different flavor. So that's why, generally when we say Vrindavan, or Goloka Vrindavan, we mean Braj. But sometimes when you have to be technical, then there's Braj of Vrindavan. That's why sometimes the Acharyas specifically mention Braj of Vrindavan. Because that means the Vrindavan we're talking about. Or Swayam Krishna is there. Otherwise the other, then it's there's a different flavor. Like that. It's still Radha and Krishna. Does that make sense? But the whole element the is different. The opulence is there and things like that. So the sweetness is not total, right? Because there is that element of that respect, you know, for that greatness. But it's just those conjugal pastimes are more manifest. While in Vaikuntha, you don't really see it. Dwarka, you see a little bit more.
Vaikuntha, they're completely separate. The Narayan and Lakshmi, they don't live together, really.
From what I've understood is that at night there is, but during the day, she may be there, sit on his lap, but it's just, it's all reverence, it's all service. She's just the main servitor. You know, she's the wife, so it works like that. So that's, you know, that aspect. But that sweetness aspect's not really there. But even in the Vaikuntha temples, when the room where the deity sleeps, then they have the nice bed, pictures of Vrindavan pastimes, mirrors on the ceiling, all these kind of things that are more like Vrindavan, that aspect. You notice I said mirrors, not mirror. Right? You know, you put lamps, you know, it creates a nice atmosphere, so it has that more sweet element, but it only seems to be seen when they sleep. So they'll put them to sleep, they'll wake them up, but what happens in between, they're not there. You know what I'm saying? Because you can think of, okay, there's husband and wife. You know that husband and wife, they have a close relationship, but it's not part of the relationship that you deal with. So it doesn't bring up any of that kind of thoughts of that level of closeness, of sweetness. You know what I'm saying?
They don't meditate on this.
No, it's not. It's just a fact. The husband and wife are together. Just like all the residents of Vaikuntha, they're married. So they have their wives and like that. They fly around the swan airplanes together and talk about Krishna and stuff like that. So all that's going on. You know, so it's just the elements that they do things together. But it's not a matter of that the conjugal element is prominent, because in the conjugal element you also have the thing of companionship of friends. You just like the devotees will be friends, but their relationship with the Lord is on reverence. You know what I'm saying? So that's why that's you know, so in Vaikuntha you'll only find with the Lord the reverence and shanta. That's all that's there. Lakshmi's in the conjugal, but no one's connected with that. But in Dwarka, then you have all five, right? Greatly expanded. In Ayodhya, you have all five, but the conjugal rasa is limited to one, right? Parental rasa is also, you know, more narrow. Friendship, then it starts to expand, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Okay. The unequivocal instructions of Raghunathdas Babaji about the liberated souls caused Rajanath to be overwhelmed with strong spiritual emotions, and he fell at the feet of his elder Vaishnav guru. Raghunathdas Babaji, moved to tears, took Rajanath in his arms and, exuding paternal affection, firmly embraced him. Time had flown by and it was late in the night when Vrajanath took leave of Raghunath Das Babaji and slowly returned home, totally engrossed in Babaji's instructions in the matter of the Jiva's final destination. While taking his supper, he spoke sternly with his grandmother. Grandmother, if you desire to see me at all, you must cancel those things you call matrimonial arrangements. Vani Madhava should be told not to visit this house. You must not involve him in any of our family matters. He is my enemy. I will not speak to him anymore, and you should not have anything to do with him. A very intelligent lady, the elderly grandmother, calmly considered her conversation earlier that morning with Vani Madhava and the one now with her grandson, Vrajanath, and quickly decided to postpone the entire matter of Vrajanath's matrimony to a future, more congenial time, right? We're not giving up. We're just, okay, by the looks of it, then, you know, okay, it's kind of... Further, she's thinking, further pressure and coaxing will aggravate the displeasure of Vrajanath, perhaps provoking him to leave home for Varanasi, Kashi, or Vrindavan. Therefore, I shall leave it up to Sri Parameshwara to do as he pleases, she concluded within her mind, right?
Okay. Good old grandma.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they're smart. They're practical.
Clever.
Yeah. Summary of Chapter 18, Nitya Dharma, Sambandha Abhide and Prayojana, Part 6, an analysis of simultaneous oneness and difference, right? So now this is the last of the aspects of Sambandha. So we've discussed the Lord in those three aspects, and we've discussed the Jiva in the three aspects. Right? Means... the jiva itself, then the jiva as liberated, the jiva as conditioned, right? And the Lord as the Supreme Lord, the Lord of the energies and the Lord of rasa. So now, how do all this connect together? That is going to be achinta bheda bheda tattva. That's how all this is held together. Vani Madhava was a vicious and harmful person. Wanting to retaliate against Vrajanath for castigating him, he decided to spite Vrajanath and all the Babajis. Right? He's the one that created the trouble, and then when it backfires on him, then he gets upset that why you made trouble for me. That's the problem with this, the envious mentality. They can never see where they've gone wrong. They've done something wrong to you, and then you respond badly, then they get upset with you for dealing with it, as if what you did was the first thing.
Standard atheist.
Yeah, that's just pretty chill. He recruited other criminal men of his own ilk and planned to beat Vrajanath severely when he would approach the lonely little hillock of Lakshmanatila, whilst returning from Srivasangam at night. Somehow the secret plan leaked out. Sketchy news of it reached the ears of Vrajanath. He spoke to Raghunath Das Babaji, and together they concluded that Vrajana should reduce the frequent visits, limiting them to urgent daytime calls with a strong escort. After a few weeks, unexpectedly, the news came that the vicious Vani Madhava had died of a snake bite. That same evening, Vrajanath went to see Raghunath Das Babaji, paid his prostrate obeisances, and said, "I will again start coming regularly to offer my respects to your hallowed feet. The hindrance Vani Madhava has left this world forever." Right. So, yeah, it's interesting how Vani Madhava, the word hindrance is actually a how you say definition of him, not. Yeah. Not the hindrance caused by Vani Madhava is that. No, the hindrance Vani Madhava has left this world, right? At first, the compassionate Raghunath Das Babaji was saddened when he heard that a human being whose consciousness was slumbering in ignorance has died before awakening to self-realization. He kept silent for a while and then said, "Certainly the jiva is the property of Sri Krishna and must go wherever he is sent. My boy, are there any other problems nettling you?" Okay. Nettling, because they have this bush called nettles. Yeah. And they have all these spikes, and if they poke you, they hurt.
Yeah.
Stinging nettles. Yeah, so I guess if it's something's nettling you, it's poking you and stinging you. Right. Rajanath, my only worry has been that for the past several days, I was deprived of relishing your nectarian instruction. This made me very anxious, and so now I am eagerly waiting to hear the rest of the Dasamula Siksha. Raghunath Das Babaji, I am always ready to help you. You can, of course, also ask questions about the topics we have already covered. Rajanath, under what name are Sri Chaitanya's teachings known? There are already famous teachings. Did Sri Gauranga endorse any of these philosophies, or did he teach something entirely new? Raghunath Das Babaji, listen to the 8th verse of the Dasamula Siksha. In their entirety, the material and spiritual worlds are the transformations of the energies of Sri Krishna. Vivartavad, the impersonal theory of illusory transformation of Brahman, is false. It is a noxious pollution of Kali Yuga and contradictory to the conclusions of the Vedas. The philosophy of its, right, because the point is in their entire, the spirit, material and spiritual worlds are transformations of the energies of Krishna. So that's Vivarta, what's the other?
Parinamavad,
that means transformed. So Vivartavad, that transformation is illusion, because Brahman has no quality, so therefore there's no activity, there's no change. So they would say any change, that's illusion. Right? Mm-hmm. But the point is, you know, there is all these things going on, so where did that come from?
Yeah.
Right? Because they were saying Maya's illusion, still illusion is there, there's qualities, there's everything like that. Where did that come from? Because if Brahman is all there is, it had to come from Brahman. And if it didn't come from Brahman, then what else is out there? Are we alone? So it creates problems, yeah. Right? You know, but you could probably get a good screenplay out of it. But
I think they've gotten several.
Yeah, it's got a few out of that. Yeah. Okay. The philosophy of Achinta Beta Beta Tattva, inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference, is the true pure essence of the Vedic truth. The practice of this philosophy elevates a person to the perfection of developing divine transcendental love for the eternal absolute truth, Sri Krishna. Right? Because the other ones, because they're not manifesting the full, all the aspects of Achinta Beta Beta Tattva, so generally speaking, they're dealing with Vaikuntha or lower levels of Vrindavan. They're not actually dealing with the supreme absolute personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. That only Achinta Beta Beta Tattva can deal.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Mm.
Because we see the Madhvas, the Shris, like that, they're dealing with Vaikuntha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
right? Then the Nimbarkas, they're dealing with Vrindavan, but not Braj Vrindavan, right? Because there's no separation, right? And then others is parental rasa, but then, you know, there's more of the it's more of a parakya element because Radharani's there. Right, and the head pujari dresses like in Nathdwar. The head pujari, he dresses Nathji, but his wife, she dresses Radharani. Does that make sense? Because the family thing is so the older doesn't deal with the younger person's wife. Right, so you understand. So there's that element. So it won't be Braj. Right, but you know they're not worried about that because parental rasa. What do you care if it's parakia or swakia? It's not an important element. Does that make sense? So it doesn't come up. So they're not actually dealing with Braja Krishna. So that achinta veda veda tattva. That's what Lord Chaitanya is giving that hasn't been given before. Because otherwise, Radha Krishna means devotional service has been given. Devotional service to Vishnu, right? The devotional service to Radha and Krishna, right? Spontaneous devotional service, these have all been given. So what hasn't been given? All that spontaneous devotional service to Braja Krishna, that hasn't been given. That's what's unique and special. So yeah. The practice... Oh, okay. Sri Shankaracharya has attempted to establish Vaivartavad, or Vivartavad, the theory of illusory transformation of Brahman from these sutras. He taught that if Parinamavad, the transformation of Brahman, were applied to Brahman as an explanation for the creation, then Brahman would lose its own supreme unchangeable identity. Right? Because he's taking change has to be material. Mm-hmm. He doesn't appreciate that change can be spiritual. Right? That's the difficulty. Because it says that change is there on the material platform, but at the same time, if God's a person and doing things, and he has associates, that means there must be change on the spiritual platform. Mm-hmm. But they don't connect the two.
Could you say that this actually counters the whole impersonalist philosophy by what he's saying?
Meaning?
The illusion of reality can't come out of Brahman because then it wouldn't be Brahman. That's actually what he's saying.
Yeah. But then the problem is then this point is that there is an illusion.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, so where did that come from? Exactly. It does counter. Exactly. But then if they say, well, it's an illusion that there's an illusion, you're actually all in Brahman, then why do we need to listen to you?
Yeah, exactly.
If we're all on the Brahman platform, then hey, shut up and get out of here. You know?
You don't exist.
You know, we got a party to go to. You know, it's like that. You know, it's like, it's not important. Right? Because that's the thing. Because then if it's illusion, then what you're speaking is also illusion.
Yeah.
So your whole philosophy is illusion. Everything's an illusion. You know? That's the problem with it. It's not well thought out. That's why Shankaracharya tricked the Buddhists. Right? Right? Like that. It's a trick. But because they're materialists, they buy it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Great thing about
let's say... Just generally around the world, what's the reputation of a second-hand car salesman?
Not good.
Not good. But people, do they go to the second-hand car sale?
And
do they get tricked?
Yes.
Yes. But they know that's what's going to happen. But they do it anyway. Because it's cheaper. You know, like that.
I think they've figured it out.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying it's all...
Standard.
The whole thing is there. You know, if I tell you if you buy this, you'll be happy. Because you want to be happy materially, you accept it. Right? You buy it.
You can see commercials how that's working.
Yeah.
They're not big on realism.
No. And the more it's kind of unreal, the better it is, you know. Like that, you know. So talk practical.
Yeah.
Illusion works.
You know. Just being practical,
yeah. Yeah. So all this thing, no, people want to hear the truth. They want it. No, they don't.
No, they don't. They want to hear something nice.
You know, who wants to hear, you know, on your birthday, okay, you know, you're 34 years dead. You know? They don't want to hear that. You know? Unless they're a goth. Okay, then that'll fly. That'll work. Yeah, okay, you know. But other than that, then it's a problem. They don't want to hear the truth. He taught that if Parinamabhava transformation, the transformation of Brahman were applied to Brahman as an explanation for the creation, then Brahman would lose its own supreme unchangeable identity. Sri Shankaracharya therefore proposed that Vivartavad was the superior philosophical conclusion. This theory of Vivartavad is also known as Mayavad. Right? So it means the technical philosophy is Vivartavad. The people who practice it are Mayavads, because it's Mayavad, means it's the philosophy of Maya. That this world is here, it's created by Maya, not by the Lord. So that's why they're called Mayavad. So sometimes we think, oh, wouldn't they be upset if we called them Mayavads? No, that's what they are. That's their philosophy. So Vivartavad or Mayavad, it's the same. Attempting to establish his philosophical proposal, Sri Shankaracharya took verses from the Vedas out of context and at his convenience to support his views, right? At his convenience. In other words, ones that he could misinterpret. You don't take ones that you can't misinterpret. You take ones you can. Right? So he would use those, and then, because it's there, if it says Brahman, you know, he walks but he does not walk, you know, so you're going to kind of leave that one. Yes. You know, you're going to take something else that says that, you know, he's beyond, he has no senses, he like this. So you'll take it, but it means in the context, he has no material senses and all that. But he'll only take those verses at his convenience that work for his philosophy, right?
And this is how Karma Mimamsa actually trumps...
No, it'll have problem with Shankar. Shankar can defeat karma, because it's Vedanta. Mm-hmm. What we're saying is karma can defeat the other four below it.
Oh.
Like that. But it can't defeat Vedanta.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
But now Shankara Vedanta, Vaishnava Vedanta can defeat that. Mm-hmm. And then a Vaishnava Vedanta, then a Chintabheda Veda Tattva can illuminate all the other Vedanta perspectives and actually bring out their conclusion. It just makes it so much easier.
Yeah.
Like that. So that's how it goes. We'll get into the Vedanta aspect, you know, later. It's coming up. When we finish karma, there'll be a little bit of something there, and then we'll go into the detail of the sampradayas. Okay. Okay. Through his doctrine, Sri Shankaracharya attempted to defeat the theory of Parinamabhava, the transformation of Brahman, which evidently existed prior to his appearance. Right? So it's always been there. It means there's always been the impersonal path, so he was taking from that, but just using that method to establish Buddhism, basically, to just bring the Buddhistic philosophy into the Vedic context, right? Because that's what you're having to do. You're having to convert Buddhists who are non-Vedic into following the Vedas. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. So depending on what part of the world you're in, it's easier to leave the philosophy the same, leave the culture the same, leave the philosophy the same, change the culture. In other part of the world, don't change the culture. You can change the philosophy, but, you know, it's like like that. So Parinamabhava was always there. It has to be. Otherwise, where does the Tridandi Sannyas come from? And those things that Manu mentions. So it's always been there. Right? The Mayavad doctrine preached by Sri Shankaracharya is contradictory to the basic tenets of bhakti. In contrast, the four Vaishnavacharyas, stalwarts in their particular disciplic successions, presented all their various philosophies anchored in the truth of devotional surrender to Bhagavan. Later, Sri Chaitanya, holding the complete teachings of the Vedas in the highest esteem, synthesized the essence of the entire Vedas in his instructions. The philosophy of Sri Chaitanya is renowned as Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference. Sri Chaitanya is in the disciplic succession of Sri Madhvacharya, but only the condensed essence of the views of Madhvacharya has been collected by Sri Chaitanya. Right? So not the details. Those are the lines of details, but the essence of it is there. And that's been expanded. Rajanath, what is the meaning of Parinamavad? Raghunath Das Babaji. Parinamavad, right, because before this, he would have been a Mayavad, right? Because then they're Vaishnav, they're worshipping Vishnu, but they're thinking that the form of the Lord is temporary. So once you worship the form of the Lord, because otherwise, in conditioned state, you can't just think of nothing. So therefore, you have the form of the Lord. So it's not going to be just anything. So it'll be something in the mode of goodness, right? So that means then Vishnu is in the... Their idea is that Vishnu is the perfect manifestation of the mode of goodness. Right, so they worship, but then once they transcend goodness, then they transcend the form, and then they merge in the Brahman. So actually, they're Mayavadis. So Vivartavad will be their philosophy. So now the question: what is this Parinamavad? Naturally, but at the same time, he's also explained Mayavad. So it's actually a natural next step. But coming from him, we can understand the background. He wouldn't know much about this. Right. Otherwise, then for us, we know Parinamavad. What's the Mayavad? You know, it's like, how does that work? Right. Yes.
Maharaj, was that the Panchapasana also established by Shankaracharya? Was it also?
No, Panchapasana always was there. It's Vedic. It's a Vedic thing. That's what your karma deals with. Same times when they move into Gyan, they use the same thing. It's just that it goes to a more subtle level.
So Shankaracharya just reestablished that what was already before existing.
Yeah, but even that Panchapasana, because that'll come in karma, he doesn't really deal with that so much. He's just point is this takes you take sannyas, you know, then we'll talk about it. Don't take sannyas, we don't talk. Right? You know, so like when you want to come to Shankaracharya, you know, you bring your resume and it should say on there when he opens it, sannyas. If it is, he'll talk to you. If it doesn't, then hey, it doesn't matter what's on there. It's like, you know, say, but the natural thing if you establish that as the highest, that will all come down through everything. You know what I'm saying? It means you go to any of the countries, whereas Buddhist countries, your Buddhists are in, you have monks in the monastery, but all the rest of all the grihasthas, they're also Buddhists. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, if you establish that top level, because how is he going to preach to everybody? He only has to preach to the top guys. He preaches to them, they'll make everybody else. Well, you know what I'm saying? That's how it works, right? Same way with Buddhism. You catch all the head guys in the Mayavad. Excuse me, the other... Oh, that's what he did. The other way, he just caught all the head guys in the Buddhists and then converted them. Same time as in the Acharyas, you catch the top guys in the Mayavad philosophy, and then they preach to everybody else. Like, they're already preaching. You know what I'm saying? The point is, the manager's already managing. So now he manages for Krishna. So then it works. Yeah. Okay, what is the meaning of Parinamavad? Raghunath Das Babaji. Parinamavad may be divided into two concepts. Brahma Parinamavad, the transformation of Brahman, and Tat Shakti Parinamavad, the transformation of the energies of Brahman. Does that make sense? So one is the transformation of Brahman, the Brahman itself, because it doesn't have it, then it's transformed. The other is the energies of Brahman. So that means you're talking about Parabrahman. The Brahman has energies, has everything. It's just not, you know. According to the adherents of Brahma Parinamavad, the impersonal Brahman transforms itself on the one hand into the living entities and on the other hand into the material universe. Thus they conclude that Brahman is the only known entity. Hence this theory may be called Advaitavad. In this context, Vivarta and Parinama are synonyms indicating illusory transformations of the impersonal Brahman. Right? So then he's taking it that some will say, yes, we Parinamavad, that the Brahman is done, but that's called Advaitavad. So there's a slight difference between Advaitavad and what do you call it?
Vivarta.
And, yeah, the Vivarta, the Mayavad. But technically, in this case, they're both the same. Right? Because one is transformation of Brahman, there are no, and it just means he becomes the jivas, becomes the material energy. But where's the Lord's energies that he's interacting with? So you're still ending up just with Brahman. So they'll come to the Advaita platform. The second group, Tat Shakti Parinamavad, states that Tat, Brahman, does not accept transformation, but that the Achintya Shakti of Brahman is transformed partly into the Jiva Shakti, which manifests the jivas, and partly into the Maya Shakti, which manifests the material universe. If this view is acknowledged, then Brahman himself does not become transformed. Vikara, transformation is a separate, distinct entity manifesting from the Absolute. Yogurt, produced from milk, retains some similarity with milk. However, the intelligence designates yogurt with a separate identity from milk. This is vikara. Therefore, the view of the Brahma Parinamavad, that this material universe and the jivas are transformations of Brahman, and yet still not different from Brahman, without separate identities from Brahman, is very distorted and lacking in intelligence. In other words, since milk is transformed into yogurt, but you still designate it as separate, but in this Advaita Vad, then they're saying that the jiva is a transformation of Brahman and the Maya is a transformation of Brahman, but they're still the same. They're still the same Brahman. So they're not making designations even in Brahman. So therefore, again, it's the illusion of that separate. So it's just cleverly the same thing, just packed a little differently so it catches. In other words, the other ones couldn't answer it, so these guys have come up with this. It answers it, but it still leaves the philosophy the same and the result the same. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's a little more tricky like that.
So this Advaita Vad corresponds to our Brahma Vad and Brahmavadis?
I'm not exactly sure that it does, because the Brahmavadis, it's all Brahman, so even this is Brahman. So there is no illusion, it's all Brahman. You know, the illusion is it's not Brahman. So they're actually a little bit closer to the proper understanding. But it's incomplete because they don't understand that beyond Brahman there's Paramatma and Bhagavan. Mm-hmm. That's the weakness there. Right? But, you know, so that's, you know, you can distinguish. It's not an illusion. It's not that the tree is not actually there. No, the tree is there. It's tree Brahman. Right? You know, so it's... So you walk around tree Brahman, because when body Brahman and tree Brahman bump into each other, then it hurts.
Pain Brahman.
Pain Brahman, yes. Like that, yes. Very good. Okay, so we'll end here, and then we'll continue. Tomorrow's Wednesday. Thursday morning.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaurav.